Yeah. corpo estuda a dar de Maharaj Gita. Satyanam Bhaktivinoda Thakur Gita. Shrupa Sanatana Bhakta Raghunatha Sarila Gopal Bhakta Dasa Raghunatha Sarva Swami Prabhupada Gita. Grenche Gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Gurunityananda Sri Adeta Radha Shana Sarva Bhakta Gita. Mayapur Namadhi Jagannath Puri Dhanam Mathura Vrindavan Shyama Kundi Vadhakundi Puri Dhanam Harinam Sankirtan Ki Itaya Gaur Pranandi Bhav Gloshya Dasamadhi Bhav Gloshya Dasamadhi Bhav Gloshya Dasamadhi. I think I feel more comfortable sitting with you. I couldn't figure a word you said, but the only three Swedish words I remember is, I remember some more, but Hur Marzu. How are you? And, Jagadro? I know another one, but I won't tell it now. That is, I am hungry. How many of you know the first verse of the Mahabharata? It's also there in the Bhagavatam. The first verse. Does everybody understand English yet?
We have some for the first
Sanskrit? I've seen him before. He was
small.
Yeah, I remember him. How many of you know the first verse of the Mahabharata? Anybody? How the Mahabharata starts? It's a very simple one. It's there in the Bhagavatam. It's Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasa Tato Jaya Udiyare. We'll be seeing this verse over the next 7 days. So we'll have Mahabharata Katha. We should have had it for all the 13 days, but I'll be traveling a bit. I'll be back on Monday next. And from next Monday to 28th, that is Sunday, we'll have 7 days of Mahabharata. We'll discuss ancient Indian politics, drama, music, lots more. Before we start, can we all come close together? Come on, come on. It's It's a friendly evening chat on the Mahabharata. He likes the wall. He likes the wall behind you. Before we get into the Mahabharata, I think it's important to understand what it is and how it fits into the whole picture of Indian scriptures. Like, in the 19th century, 1800s, several British people came to India. I mean, they started coming about before, but many British people came to India for trade, and they eventually wanted to find out what is the religion of the Indian people. And what is their Bible? So they went to different places and said, so what is your scripture? Like Muslims have the Quran. And we have the New Testament. And the Jews have the first five books of the Old Testament, the Tanakh. And each religion has their own book. What is your book? Can you tell me? What is the book? Yes. Yes. But there is also Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Isn't it? And what about the Vedas? What happened to the Vedas? The Vedas are also holy books. So if Vedas are the scripture, then what happens to Bhagavad Gita? Isn't that a tricky question? And what about the Upanishads? The Upanishads are also sacred. Right? And then if you go further, you will see a host of other books called the Brahmanas, the Aranyakas. There's so many. So many. Then there are the Tantras. Right? There are so many Puranas. Padma Puran, Brahma Vaivarta Puran, Garuda Puran, Narsingha Puran, Vishnu Puran. So many. So, what is your book? And there was no answer. They came up with this idea that yes, our book is Bhagavad Gita, and they were right. But, you know, Bhagavad Gita is like a pivot. Do you know what a pivot is? A pivot? Pivot is like, you know, you say you have 10 strings and then you have one string tying everything down. Right? You have the Vedas, you have the Upanishads, you have the Brahmanas, you have the Aranyakas, you have the Itihasas, Ramayana and Mahabharata. There's so many. In fact, if you talk about Indian scriptures, you could fill up this temple. Literally, fill up this temple with palm leaf manuscripts, fill up Govindas and fill up the next building, and that would be nothing. There are so many books. And the Christian missionary said, we have this book, the Bible, what do you have? We have the Bhagavad Gita. And the next thing they asked them, so what religion are you? And they said, some said we are Shaivas, we worship Shiva. Some said we are Ganapatyas, we worship Ganesha. Some said we worship the sun, Surya. Some said we worship Vishnu. So there were so many of them, and there were so many books. The Western people, when they came to India, they couldn't make sense of what was happening. Just imagine, you're a foreigner. Now that you know about India, we have airplanes going to and fro, but those days, you just had a boat. And he had to go all the way around Africa and the Mediterranean, and then you could get to India. Right? It wasn't easy, and you didn't have telephones. Just pick up and make a Skype call. It wasn't easy. And then suddenly you land up, it's like a new planet. And it's all these people. I mean, there are a lot of resources there. They had a lot to take, materially take from there, but it was just a strange place. Right. And then, in order to rule a place, why do we study chemistry or physics or mathematics? Because you know, we want to control the world we see around us, and that's the method to do it. That's how we do it, right? And they wanted to understand how India works in order to control it. Right? And it landed up to be a big bad mess for 300 years. But the author we have today, Vyasadeva, 5,000 years ago, he was in a similar mess. Because there was the Vedas, there was only one Veda. Have you heard of the English word wit, W-I-T, wit? Wit, intelligence, wit, like, you know, he has a quick wit. Quick wit is very intelligent. Wit means intelligent. Or you have the word video, right? Everybody has the word video. Video? Nobody watches video here? Video, it's simple. Video. You know, the word video is so similar to the English, to the Sanskrit word vid, or vidya. Vidya in Sanskrit means knowledge. That which you see, that which you understand, that which opens up the world to you is vidya. That which you see might open up the world for you is video. They're kind of very similar. And the scripture started with the Veda. There was only one Veda. And of course, there's another category of books called Smritis. Smritis are like law books, the books of law. Like you have, in the Old Testament, you have Deuteronomy and all these books. Have you read the Old Testament, anybody? The Christian Bible? They have law books, and there are law books in Islam, there are law books in all religions, and there are law books in Hinduism. And some of these law books say that if you touch writing, if you touch pen and paper, you are so polluted that you have to go and take a shower. You have to take a bath. Writing is considered polluting. And I'll tell you why. Did any of you ever in your life sign a contract? Did you sign a contract? Why did you sign a contract? Yeah, but why? Why do you sign the paper? And what does it mean? Yeah, which means if you run away, I'll catch you. Right? Because there is a lack of trust. Or do you keep notes? Like today morning, 7 a.m. this meeting, 8 a.m. this meeting, 9 a.m. this meeting, 10 a.m. pay the bills, 11 a.m. make this phone call. Do you keep notes? Like things to do notes? Why do we keep notes? Because we don't trust our attention. We're going to forget. Right? We write things down because we don't trust our memory, and then we don't trust the integrity of other people. We don't trust the integrity, the honesty of other people. That's why we write things down. Unless you know a person very well, you don't trust the word of mouth. Think about it. Right? And the Vedas were called Shruti, which means never ever write it down. If you wrote it down, God help you. Right? And then Vyasadeva came, Hare Krishna. Vyasadeva came at a certain point in history, and this was around the time Krishna was there. And he was seeing how people actually started losing integrity. They started losing memory. They became quarrelsome. And he thought, now is the time. If I don't do it now, it's over. Just imagine the world's coming to an end and you have the secret. It's a serious thing. Now, do you know, in Ireland there's government funding for it. In Ireland, they actually store seeds every year so that if the world comes to an end or if there is a big catastrophe, they can take the seeds out of their lockers and then plant again. And they dig it so deep underground that it won't be destroyed by atom bombs or anything. They keep seeds like that. They think the world is coming to an end. Or imagine you have, say you have the cure to cancer. And you are the only person who has that secret. And you are dying. What will you do? But before you market it, you probably would jot it down. Right? You'd write it down. So there were these secrets, the keys to the world, the Vedas. And they were fast dying out. Right? If you go to India today, nobody knows the Vedas. They don't know what's happening there. Vyasdeva was in a similar situation. So he divided the Vedas into four divisions. Right? Because the Vedas were just so big, it was difficult to remember all at one go. So better break it up. But even after breaking up the Vedas is very complicated. Nobody could understand what was going on. Last quarter I taught a course on the Rig Veda at the University of Chicago, and all my students, we studied the Veda for almost 3 to 4 weeks, and they couldn't figure out what was happening. Suddenly Indra comes and this guy's there, and it wasn't even like a funny Bollywood movie. It was just absurd. And Vyasadeva saw that the Veda was so absurd that it needs some explanation. Therefore, the Brahmanas and the Aranyakas, the Brahmanas were meant for people who stay at home, to do yajna, to give charity. Those were the regulations for the home-dwelling people. And then, for the ascetics in the forest, there were the Aranyakas. But even then, nobody understood what was going on. There's like huge sacrifices and hundreds and thousands of rupees, you know, I don't say they didn't have rupees, but or dollars. But they had some kind of money. They, in the ancient Indian world, a rich man was called Bahuvrihi. Bahuvrihi means a rich guy, man. One had a lot of rice. So rice was the currency. Rice and cows. So the more cows you had and the more rice you had, the richer you were. Right. And then they wrote the Upanishad, explaining why we have these rules, why to do a fire sacrifice, you know, why to chant these mantras, you know, what is reality, who are you? But even the Upanishads were studied by people who were very intelligent. It didn't seep down in society. Hardly anybody understood it. Very complicated situation. You have all these hundreds of books meant for the benefit of people and they don't understand what's going on. Right? Just like a school. And then Vyasadeva devised a plan. He said, you know, these people, if they listen to stories, these Vedas might make sense to them. Now who likes listening to stories? Just two of you? So Vyasadeva had an idea. He thought, let me write down a story. A story of Krishna and his friends. And I'm going to show in that story how dharma works. The essence of the Vedas and the Upanishads. How the whole thing works. So he took several years off. He wrote the Mahabharata in 3 years. The Adi Parva of the Mahabharata, which we will study today, says the Mahabharata was written by Vyasadeva in 8,000 verses in 3 years. So this is a small book. And he followed the Adi Kavi, Valmiki. Valmiki had written the Ramayana before him, outlining the story of Lord Rama. We'll discuss it some other time, Ramayana. But he wrote the story of the Pandavas in the Mahabharata. But the problem is, after having written the Mahabharata, he felt dissatisfied. Just imagine, you write a book, you publish it, people are reading it, but you, as the author, have a broken heart. You set out to do something, you set out to say something, you finish the book and you realize you miserably failed. Vyasadeva, after having finished the Mahabharata, sat down and thought, I have miserably failed. And as he was thinking like that, his guru came to him. And you know, like, in times of trouble, we all need a friend, a shoulder to cry on. And his guru told him, you know, Vyasa, the problem is, you wrote the Mahabharata, but you didn't talk enough about Krishna there. Mahabharata is a great book, people are going to enjoy it. In order to make it popular, you lost the essence. Right? Rewrite the Mahabharata. Write the whole story all over again. And when the Mahabharata was rewritten, do you know what we had? The book. Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the Mahabharata rewritten. Vyasa corrected all his mistakes. All the mistakes he made in the Mahabharata has been corrected in this book. We will discuss it. I think tomorrow morning we have a session on Mahabharata. The similarities and differences between Mahabharata and Bhagavata. And then Vyasa started writing the Bhagavata. And in the third verse of the Bhagavata, he says, Nigamakalpatarvagalitam phalam Shukamukadam ritadravasam yutam Pivata bhagavatara samalayam Muhurahurasika bhuri bhavuka. Hey bhavuka, hey thoughtful, oh thoughtful people. Hey bhuri bhavuka, hey rasik. Dear friends who know how to enjoy the taste of love. Listen. Drink Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the mature fruit of the tree of the Vedas. Like we have a verse from Shankaracharya. Sarvopanishado davo dobhago palanandana parthavatsa sudhir bhokta gito parishamritam maha. Because like I said, Upanishads are very difficult to understand. Right? And Shankaracharya says, the Upanishads are like a big cow. And Krishna is the milkman. Arjuna is drinking that milk. This is the great Bhagavad Gita. That is the essence of the Upanishads. And Bhagavatam is the essence of Nigama. Remember we were discussing right now, from the Vedas, the Brahmanas, the Aranyakas, the Upanishads, the Smritis, all these books, all of them together is called the Nigama. Right? And this is the fruit of that tree. If the Vedas, the Upanishads, everything is a tree, including the Mahabharata, a tree, then Bhagavatam is the fruit of the tree. What do you eat? The fruit of the tree. Which one do you like better? Naturally. Naturally. Right? Anyway, and the Mahabharata started as a snake sacrifice. Do you know what a snake sacrifice is? Sounds pretty funny, isn't it? Snake sacrifice is a sacrifice where you bring hundreds and thousands of snakes and just burn them. But why? We will narrate that story of the Mahabharata. Long time ago there was this king, Parikshit. And in Sanskrit, the word Parikshit means tested. One who has passed an examination. Right. And he had passed a big exam. He was about to be killed when he was inside his mother's womb. He had a bad start. Somebody hurled a very dangerous weapon towards his mother when he was in the womb. We'll come back to that story. When, I think, seventh day, sixth day, then we're discussing the war and the battle of the Mahabharata. So Parikshit, when he was about to be born, he almost died. And inside his womb, he suddenly had a flash of light appear. And he saw a beautiful person with four arms, holding a conch shell, a disc, a lotus on a cloth, and protecting him. So don't worry. Somebody had hurled a very dangerous missile towards Uttara, his mother. And, you know, like, it doesn't take a bullet to kill a person, but if you shoot a missile towards somebody, it's a serious thing. And if you shoot the Brahmastra, are you aware of the Brahmastra? Prabhupada explains the Brahmastra is actually a, you know, ancient version of our nuclear missile. This guy was so upset, this person was so upset, Ashwatthama, was so upset that he threw a nuclear missile at an expecting mother, just to make sure that the mother and the baby are dead. And time and again you will see in the Mahabharata that although sometimes Pandavas look like they're not on the right side, they're always saved by Krishna. It's a very serious question. Is God partial? Is God partial? If God is not partial, why is he protecting some people and destroying other people? God must be partial. Why is he protecting the Pandavas all the time? Think about it. And when this baby was in the womb, he suddenly saw this beautiful, cloudish colored person, blackish person, come and bless him, saying, "Don't worry, I'm here." And then he disappeared. And the Brahmastra, the Messiah, was averted. That's how Parikshit was born. We'll come back to Parikshit. So Parikshit grew up to become a great king. Sometimes we think, how can one man rule the whole earth? Because the Mahabharata, as well as the Bhagavatam, says Parikshit was the king of the whole world, including Scandinavia. You know, in Sanskrit, desha is the Sanskrit word for land, right? And in Sanskrit, this place is called Skandadesha. It's a Skandadesha. Skanda is one of the sons of Shiva and Parvati, and he apparently had control over this place, but Scandinavia was very much a part of Bharatvarsha, India. And when Parikshit grew up, there was practically no crime in his kingdom. It's very difficult. And he took the role of a policeman, and a spy, and a king, and a well-wisher. He would go out in the streets in disguise and see whether people in this kingdom are happy. What's wrong? Do you have the Prime Minister of Sweden doing that? Going around in like a jeans and t-shirt and just checking if people are okay? Wish. It doesn't happen anyway, don't worry. But Parikshit Maharaj was doing something like that. And then one night, towards the edges of his city, Hastinapur, which is close to present-day Delhi. Have you heard of Delhi? Delhi? The city of Delhi in northern India? Hastinapur was more or less around Delhi. And he was towards the edges of the city. There he saw a man, pretty good looking, dressed up nicely, without any reason beating up a cow and a bull. Right? And this bull was standing on one leg. He chopped off the other three legs. Pretty gross. This man chopped off the other three legs of the bull, and the cow was standing beside the bull and crying, and this man was just like incessantly beating them up. And Parikshit came there, hey, stop, what are you doing? Don't you realize you're in the kingdom of King Parikshit? Of course, he wouldn't tell who he was. And this man said, so what? What's wrong? He said, who are you? He said, I am Kali, the lord of this age. He said, and why are you doing this? He said, because this is my dharma, this is what I'm supposed to do. I like it. And he said, stop that. I am King Parikshit. This will not go on in my kingdom. And this man, who was dressed as a king but was behaving like a very low born person, which he said, I'm sorry, forgive me. I shouldn't have done it. He said, but get out of my kingdom. But then he said, the whole world is your kingdom. Where do I go? He said, I don't know, just get out of here. You can't stay here and do these crazy things. And Kali said, well, at least give me some places to reside, some places to stay. And Parikshit said, you will stay where there is slaughter, animal slaughter going on, where there is violence. You can reside there. And Kali said, but there is hardly any violence in your country. Where do I go? And he said, well, okay, you will stay where there is intoxication. You know the word inebriety? When somebody is intoxicated, he loses control of reality. He loses sight of reality. He said, wherever there is intoxication and inebriety, you can reside there. But then Kali said, but there are hardly any drunkards in your country. So there's hardly anybody is into intoxication. Where shall I go? Where there is a desire to quickly gain wealth without work, where there is speculation, you can go there. Where there is gambling, you can go there. But then Kali said, there is hardly any gambling in your country, where do I go? Then he said, wherever there is prostitution, exploitation of human beings, you can go there. So Kali was saying, well, but even that is pretty limited in your country. Tell me something more substantial, somewhere real I could go. And King Parikshit said, you can go where there are quantities of gold. You can reside in gold. Right. And as for the cow and the bull, you know who they were? The cow represents Mother Earth, and the bull represents dharma. And the four legs of the bull are cleanliness, austerity, peacefulness, and mercy. Right? And now I will relate the details. Wherever there is slaughter and violence, there is no mercy. There are so many people I have come across. They like eating meat, but when I ask them, do you know what you're eating? I don't think about it. Right. It's too complicated. Wherever there is lack of mercy, there has to be violence. So one of the legs of the bull represented mercy. That was missing. That's where Kali could go to. Austerity, or you could also translate that word as enterprise. Like, if you want to get anything done, you need to be disciplined, you need to give effort, you need to give time, right? Varangat Mahaji, how much does it take to run the shop? Or the restaurant? Or get a degree? You have to get up early in the morning, whether it's winter or summer, take a shower, take the bus, go to school. If you have a job, you have to make sure that, you know, your company is running fine. It takes a lot of effort. It's not easy. Right. And one of the legs of the bull represented that, austerity. And lack of austerity comes from intoxication. Whenever you're intoxicated, it's very difficult to work. That's why I lived in England for almost 2 years. And they said that Wednesday was midweek. Do you know what midweek is? Anybody? Do you know what midweek is? Midweek. It's the middle of the week. What does that mean? It means Friday is approaching, you can start drinking. And when Friday comes, Saturday is tomorrow, might as well start today. Saturday is like dead drunk. Sunday practically dead drunk. And when Monday morning when you get up, you have a terrible headache. So effectively, people, I mean, those who are really into intoxication were working Mondays, Tuesdays, half of Wednesdays and Thursdays. And half the week on the holiday. Whenever there is intoxication, there is lack of enterprise. One of the legs of that pool represented enterprise. And Parikshit says, wherever there is a lack of enterprise, you can recite that. Right? Wherever there is intoxication, you can recite that. The third leg of the pool, right, is cleanliness. And we have a special lecture on the 24th on Jesus through Vaishnava eyes, Jesus Christ. We have a lecture on Jesus Christ. And today, while I was coming on the plane, I was reading the biography of Christ. And one of the sections I came through, where one person was criticizing Jesus, saying, "You just ate a dirty thing." And Jesus Christ said, "You do not, you know, what you put in your mouth is less dirty than what you put out of your mouth." And even our Shastras, the Upadeshamrita by Rupa Goswami says, Vachoved, the urge of the tongue, right, can, you know, there's this English saying, loose lips sink ships. Right. You say one thing wrong and it can have serious consequences. Right. And the highest level of purity is when in your mind you know you're a servant, your position is actually to serve others. And the opposite of that is your propensity to enjoy others. Especially without responsibility. And therefore Parikshit said, you can go where there is prostitution, wherever there is mistake. Because that represents enjoyment without responsibility. Right? And that represents the third leg of the book, cleanliness. Real cleanliness is cleanliness of the heart. That's why before we start puja, we have this mantra. Yat smaret pundarik kaksha. The moment you remember Lord Vishnu, your heart as well as your body is clean. Right? Even when you have not, like, some, in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a saying that In Kali Yuga, people will think they are very clean and they have taken a shower. That's no sir. The standard of cleanliness is very high. And there was an English saying which Prabhupada repeated. Cleanliness is next to godliness. And the fourth leg of the bull was truthfulness, was honesty. And there, whenever people want to earn quick money, you know, they have to be dishonest. You cannot earn quick money by being honest. Right? Look at the United States of America today. That superpower is actually on its knees. The whole financial system has collapsed. Thousands of people are without their jobs. Right? Now, we had a discussion right in the evening. People took money from the bank to buy houses, then the banks collapsed, right? And then people lost their jobs, so they couldn't pay money to their banks. Now the banks threw people out of their homes, and now there are nobody to buy those homes back. So we have people in the streets and empty homes, right? And if this goes, and this is winter, mind you, in winter, the place where I live, it's minus 22 degrees centigrade right now. Worse than Stockholm. Stockholm is a very pleasant place. There's almost 1 foot ice. It's a heavy place. There are nice places too. But anyway, the point is, you see, the whole financial system was expected to be based on honesty, which wasn't the case. The moment you have business dealings, there has to be some amount of honesty. The moment there is exchange of resources, there has to be honesty. Right? And that's why the bull was standing on one leg. Right? If that leg was gone, that would represent that the whole economic system had collapsed. The bull was still like tottering on one leg. And Parikshit said, you can go wherever there are these four things. Violence, illicit sex, gambling, and intoxication. And where there is gold. Now some people say that Parikshit was wearing a golden crown himself. And if he said, Kali, you can go where there is gold, where would Kali go? But that is not accepted by our Vaishnava Acharyas in a sense. They say that he was such a pure devotee, it couldn't have affected him. Right? But that we leave that debate behind. This is not a session on the controversies of Mahabharata. And then one day Parikshit was out hunting. And he went to a forest. And, you know, he was chasing a deer and, you know, he was running very fast and he got very thirsty. And he landed up in a hermitage, an ashram of a sage called Shamika Rishi. And Shamika Rishi was in deep meditation. And he asked, you know, Shamika Rishi, can I have some water, please? Couldn't bother, I mean, he was engaged in doing something better. He had better things to do in life. And Parikshit said, I am King Parikshit. And you know, in India there is this saying, Atithi Devo Bhava. Do you know what that means? That a guest is like God. And, you know, Parikshit was completely ignored by the sage. And he got so upset that there was a dead snake lying on the ground. He took it and put it on the sage's neck. When you wake up, you will figure out somebody came here. Right? I mean, just imagine, you know, you're sleeping. Of course, we are not on that level to meditate like Shamika Rishi. But imagine you are sleeping at night, and when you wake up in the morning, there is a dead snake on your bed. How would that feel? Some people ask me, so what's the big deal about the snake around the sage's neck? I said, it's not a simple thing. Just imagine waking up and there's an anaconda in your bed. A dead anaconda. It is not funny. Right? But Samika Rishi, his meditation did not break. And his son came. And his son saw that somebody tried to insult my father. And you know, now that I have passed through teenage, I know that teenagers can be very angry people. Did I hear somebody laughing? Anyway, teenagers can be very angry and upset all the time. If the hormones in their body working, you know, there's something in the brain which makes them very aggressive all the time. And this guy said, whoever did this to my father, let him die. Let him die in 7 days. And that's when Samika Rishi woke up. Wait. Words are important. Lose lips, sink ships. You cannot speak something like that. You cannot curse somebody. You don't even know who did this. Right? It was the king. But I was so engrossed, I was so engaged in meditation, I didn't feel like waking up, but you should have said something like that. And the young boy said, but father, he put a snake around your neck and that was a bad thing to do. I said, cool down. Let's go to the king. Let's tell him, you know, you uttered that word. And, you know, these people were so honest and so truthful that whatever they said, even if it wasn't true at that point, would come true. These people are called Vak Siddha. Vak means, you know, the English word voice, V-O-I-C-E, is related to the Sanskrit word Vacha or Vaka. Vaka means speech. And Siddha means success. So whatever they say is successful. So if these people said that this guy is going to die in 7 days, it will come true. So Samika Rishi took his boy to the king and said, sir, forgive me, my son has made a big mistake. He has cursed you and he said you are going to die in 7 days. But we can reverse the curse. In fact, I am okay if my boy dies. You should live. And King Parikshit said, no. If that was destined, let it be. But tell me one thing I should do before I die. Tell me how to be successful in life. Because after having, you know, taken this position of a king, after being born in the family of the famous Pandavas, after having ruled the earth for so many years, I haven't been satisfied. Tell me the aim of life. Tell me what is success. He says, I know one sage. The son of Yasa, who's going to tell you what success is. Go to the bank of the Ganges and sit there. And Vyasadeva, who had written the Bhagavatam, taught it to his son, Shukadeva, and Shukadeva came and spoke this book to King Parikshit over 7 days. Right? And when, after 7 days, a huge snake came up, and when, just imagine, when Parikshit was seeing his death approaching, he had a happy heart. And he was a very young king. I mean, he was probably like maximum in his mid-age. He was not a very old person. He was very young. And he had a very promising career. I mean, just imagine if this happened to you. I know one devotee in Chaupati. You know, he was a brahmachari in the ashram for many years. And then he went and got married. His name is Toka Krishnadas. He was a servant of a very Ramana Swami. And then he got married, and, you know, after 1 year of marriage, he had a son. And then he was diagnosed with terminal cancer. Imagine if it were you. What would you have done in that situation? It's a serious thing. And I was watching the video, the last moment of Stoka Krishna Prabhu a few days back, and you know, Stoka Krishna Prabhu was smiling. And his spiritual master asked him, Stoka Krishna Prabhu, when do you want to go? When do you want to die? And he said, right at this moment. I feel so happy. There's something strange with devotees. You know, they are not afraid of death. Real devotees are not afraid of death. They have the mental preparation to die any moment. Right? And when death comes, it's a happy moment for them. And we have seen it in the lives of so many acharyas, even in the modern day. A few years back, there was a very special soul, Bhakti Tirtha Swami. And I was also, I take a lot of inspiration from his personality. He had severe bone cancer. I'm sorry, right? He had bone cancer. And then he had a leg amputated. He had a leg cut off. And he loved to dance. Just imagine, a person who loves to dance has his legs cut off. Why is God so partial? And then I was seeing, and he was on his crutch dancing. Such was the spirit. And in the last days of his life, he was so happy. He was just so happy. He said, I feel so happy to die. And then I met Sridhar Swami in, I think, 2004, 2003, in Mayapur. And Sridhar Swami was also terminally ill. His liver was completely damaged, and when I saw him, his belly kind of came out. He was in pain, and he could only take one step at a time. And even then, he would go to the Ganga every day. He would walk to the Ganga. And I saw him on the banks of the Ganga one day, and I, of course, if a person is terminally ill, you cannot ask him, how are you doing? And Sridhar Swami was in perfect consciousness. And on his way back, he showed me a place. He said, you know, I am going to be buried here in a few days. And it was next to where his friend, Tamal Krishna Goswami, was buried. He said, Tamal Krishna Maharaj and I are going to become neighbors very soon. Can we say something like that? Can we show a ground, a spot on earth and say, I'm going to be buried there in 7 days and be happy about it? Can we do it? Honestly ask yourself. Right. And these are the followers of Parikshit Maharaj. They have imbibed the spirit of Parikshit Maharaj. And Parikshit Maharaj was in a similar situation. He had 7 days to live. And he sat down on the banks of the Ganges and went fasting and heard the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we will discuss Srimad Bhagavatam, the first three verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, over the next 7-8 days in the morning, and at night you'll have Mahabharata stories. So I'll reserve the Bhagavatam for the morning, so I'll get to Mahabharata. And Parikshit had a son called Janamejaya. And when he heard that his father was bitten by a snake, he got so angry, teenage blood, that he decided, I will kill all the snakes on earth. Now does the snake sacrifice make sense? He decided he had to kill all the snakes on earth. So he made a big sacrifice. And he uttered several brahmanas and uttered some mantras, and snakes from all corners of the world began to fly in and just get into the fire. Right? Until one sage came and told him, hey, stop. There was one last snake left. That's it. Stop. You can kill them, but hold on. Let me tell you your story. Let me tell you the story of your family. Let me tell you Mahabharata. And this was the second time the Mahabharata was told. So the first time Mahabharata was told, what was composed by was by Vyasadeva in 3 years, in 3,000 years. When during the Janmeja fire sacrifice, the Mahabharata was repeated in 24,000 verses. And many, many years later, one sage who heard it from Janmeja's fire sacrifice came to a place called Naimisharanya and repeated the whole Mahabharata in 100,000 verses. And that's the present Mahabharata that we have. And this book says, if it is not in this book, if something is not in this book, it is not there anywhere else, be it earth, heaven, or the nether planet. Whatever is there, whatever exists, has to be in this book. This book is the encyclopedia of everything. That is the Mahabharata. In the Mahabharata, you have brothers trying to kill brothers. Parents trying to kill their children. Countries against each other. Battles, love stories. And at the end, everything is over. Everybody's dead. The story begins with a king without any subjects. Right? I'm sure you know the story, something about the Mahabharata. Everybody knows here, right? Still. We will stop here tonight. You begin again tomorrow morning. We have a session on the Bhagavatam. And if you enjoyed, if you want to hear the full story, please come back. I know it's quite an effort to get here, especially if it's so dark. But hey, this is the Mahabharata. Yes?
I'm wondering, if it's not tomorrow.
Tomorrow I'll be flying to Belgium. But I'll be back on Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
So we will start on 6 o'clock on Monday.
Monday.
Yeah, and
here.
Is it here? Every day?
Not
closed. Huh? No, it'll be open in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
The temple will be open. So 6 o'clock every day from Monday 22nd December.
Until
28th.
Right.
On the 24th, we have a home program where...
Dance stop.
I don't know where it is.
Govindanandini
School. Do you know where...
Dance stop?
Okay. I don't know. I go wherever people take me. if you left me alone in Stockholm, I look like a real sannyasi from 5,000 years back. Without food, without clothes, without anything. So... What? Where people people lost in the forest. Sounds like me. If you have any questions, comments, corrections, She's free. I'm here for some time more. Shalika asked him to go to the in Mahabharata, Parikshit Maharaj basically builds a tower and hides in the tower and the snake hides it. In the Bhagavatam, Parikshit goes to the back of the Ganges. And because there are these discrepancies, we have this, in the Bhagavatam it says, well, Vyasa had to rewrite the Mahabharata in the Bhagavatam. There are so many discrepancies. So we accept the Bhagavatam. No, the 100,000.
Yeah,
the Bhagavatam is 18,000. It's not a very long book. Mahabharata was first called Jaya. It was written by God. When it was recited during Janmajaya's fire sacrifice, it was called Bhara. And when it was repeated in Naimisharani, it was called Mahabharata. So Mahabharata was formed in the last stage with various other stories like Navadavananti and Astronomy. Mahabharata is filled with small stories called Upakhyana. Upakhyana means explanation. So you will see Yudhishthira Maharaj in the forest, you know, and then suddenly some sage starts telling the story. Like, this happened here. You want to hear about it?
Yeah.
totally different reality. Like, you know, like, Prabhupada was in real. And then Sri Prabhupada was found, that's what I know the story of Prabhupada. That does not mean Prabhupada was unreal. But Vedanta is the story of Prabhupada. So, if we have to, we're not talking about, we're not saying it's a story, I'm not saying it's a fiction. There's a difference between a story and a fiction.
Yeah.
Mahabharata is fact, very much fact. But whenever something is narrated, you know, like, whenever you tell people something about incidents, you know, like, if you tell me what he did yesterday, I think, in that way. That's what we did. No. First of all, what is Mahabharata? You know, there is a saying in Bengali, Jaya Rakhe, Artichi Rakhe. Any of you need Bengali here? Which means, whenever there are rumors around, even if there are rumors, some of it is not true. So even if you call anything mythology, even if you call it mythology, some of it has to be true. Otherwise, how did it become a rumor in this way? Like, who got the idea? But these are better. I mean, the reason I chose Mahabharata for this trip is because for in fact 2007, I spent 1 year in India locating the place of Mahabharata, where each incident of Mahabharata is. I was visiting the project for Rajananda before. And it was a fun project. But you know, you still actually have the places where the Mahabharata happened. You know, and they exactly match the description of the book. I mean, you can see where the Pandavas went, you know, I mean, that. Mahabharata talks about the Mahajanapad. You know what the, I mean, let's get a little bit into history now. The Mahajanapadas were great kings, right? And some of them are mentioned in, you know, they're the historical proof of them, like Jarasandha, the king of Magadha. Magadha is the Mahajanapada. Mahajanapada is a great kingdom, that's the country. Right? And it was there, and there is historical proof about it. You know, there are so many historical proofs. There is Chedi, the kingdom of Chedi, the kingdom of Matsya, the kingdom of so many kingdoms. There is Kurujangala. There are historical proofs that these things were there. I mean, it simply can't ignore. The problem is, there are a lot of contradictions. Because Western people, when they try to understand these Indian books, they, whenever they see a gap in evidence, they say there is something wrong. But the absence, and listen to this carefully, the absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence. Just because something is not there, does not prove that it was never there. Just because we don't have any books and stone inscriptions about Arjuna or the Pandavas like the Devi Giti have for King Ashoka or the Muslim emperors in India, does not mean they were not there. It's a shortcoming in terms of historical experiments to explore certain issues of it. Even carbon dating, you know what carbon dating is, right? Even if you do carbon dating gives you a very approximate, it doesn't give you an exact data. In half of the cases, carbon datings are wrong. And it has been proved by carbon dating. Right. Any other comments? Yes, Mark?
I'm just wondering, because we're mentioning the great spiritual losses and everything, we're walking away, they have to talk spiritual losses. I was just wondering, like, in comparison, like, my curriculum is like such a minority. It's like, yeah, it's almost like mindfulness, and one's not ready to give oneself to put it, like, to get them in spiritual losses, and one's almost like taking attachment. That's why one cannot be just happy on it.
I'll tell you what happened last year. This year. This is 2008, right? This year. I thought I was losing track of days, and I realized I'm losing track of years. But this year in April, Chicago had the largest earthquake in 60 to 70 years. And I was on the top of a trail school too. And 4 a.m. in the morning, everything started shaking. You know, at first I thought I was shaking my leg. And then I realized, oh, things are shaking. You know the first thing I did? I ran for my passport and tried to get out of the house. Right? And then I realized that if I run down the stairs, this building is going to collapse and I'll be dead. If I take the elevator, this building is going to collapse and I'll be dead. I'll be dead anyway. So then I just took my, kept my passport, took my beat back and started chanting. But that was like good, 2 minutes after the earthquake stopped. That was my immediate reaction. Right? But the thing is, the good news, Krishna says, even, and this is like a special Ramanuja commentary which our acharyas repeat again and again, even if you forget Krishna, Krishna will not forget you. Right? Krishna, in different places, he's called Bhava Grahi. Bhava is the inner feeling. Right? So, when you offer food to Krishna, Krishna is really not interested in food. He is interested in your feelings. But Krishna is also called Saranga, which means even if you don't have any feelings, he will accept your act. Even if you don't have any feelings, he is grateful that at least technically you offer something to Krishna. Right? In India, there is this saying that, so this man got stuck in a train. And he had to fast all this because there was no food available, and coincidentally, it was also an Ekadashi. Or, you know, there was water in an old glass, and he just slipped through it out of the window, and some of it landed on a silver tree. No, and actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati uses a story like that. He says, you know, in Hindi or Bengali, the word haram is a very bad word. It's an abuse. Right? And one Muslim guy was, you know, in the middle of the street, he was hit by a wild boar, you know, a wild pig. And as he was dying, he was screaming, haram, haram, haram. Right? And in real, he was actually chanting the names of Madram. And the same thing happened with Valmiki, the author of the Ramayana. Now Valmiki, he was a transformed character. There is a Bengali version of the Ramayana where this is written. It says, Valmiki could not, when Valmiki's guru came and Narasi had told him, chant the names of Ram. Valmiki couldn't chant the names of Ram, it's just like his tongue stuck. Right? And he said, at least Mara. This which means dead word. Say that. Say Mara, 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 Mara. Say. You say you can speak in all the words. Say Mara, 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 Mara.
Mara.
See, he's saying Ram Ram. That's how he got to God, Valmiki, the chant or name of Ram. See? So even if we at some point in our life, at least the philosophy that I have come across, and this is like hope for me as well, is that even if I don't remember Krishna at the point, at my point of death, right, Krishna remembers. And therefore there is this verse by King Kulashekhar. Krishna Tadiya Pada Pamsaja Panjaran Advaita Lithatumi Manasaraya. Krishna, let the swan of my mind enter the entangled lotus stem of your feet now. Because at the time of death, when I'll be choked with bile and mucus, how will I remember you? How will I remember you? Let's say you have a reason now. That is our hope. You really don't know what's going to happen. I mean, that's our prayers every day. I mean, frankly, I feel if I die today, I want to die satisfied. I should not have any regret, and that means I want to die with devotee practice. And even if I, and that's the other thing, even if you don't remember Krishna, if you stay with the devotees, they will remember Krishna for you. And that's what happened in the case of Bhakti Tirtha Swami, Sridhar Maharaj, and Tamakrishna Goswami, who was a parent, who had apparently an accident. Look at his pattern. I was very fortunate, I was supposed to be in the same car. I was with him. And a few hours before he left, like, he left 3 a.m. in the morning, so it was 6 p.m. in the evening before, so 9 hours before he left, he said, you should go ahead first. I'll take the car next. Right? And he came to Mayapur for the DBC meeting. But every day he hardly went there for the DBC meeting. He was like, in the morning, I was serving. In the morning, he would read from Bodhisattva. In the afternoon, he would go for a Ganga bath. And in the evening, right, from 6 p.m. to practically 12 a.m., every day, 4 to 6 hours, kirtan. And those kirtans became so popular that, you know, you had crowds of people on the terrace, opposite to our window, standing to hear those kirtans. Right. And I don't know whether Gurudev knew he would be leaving his body, but he probably did, probably didn't. He left his body on a very auspicious day. And he was right in the middle of all his gopis, chanting Hare Krishna the Holy Dham. And you know where he left? There's a spot where he left his body, is Shantipur, the place of Haridas Thakur. Right. And there was another man sitting in the car behind him, who survived. And he's called Kalasambara, he's the temple president, one of the temples in Australia. And he said, you know, when I called Kamakrishna Maharaj, like, 30 seconds before the car crashed, and I called him, and he was decent in japa, and he wouldn't respond. So even if we don't know we are dying, even if we can't take care of ourselves, don't you think Krishna will? Why is he Krishna? And there was another debated Maya. This was 2 years back. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam said, unless one is perfect, one has unalloyed devotion towards the Lord, it's not possible to enter the kingdom of God. And then we told Jananmatsu. Jananmatsu was a very saintly person in my. We asked him and he said, come on, that's not true. And I said, Jananmatsu, we're in the Bhagavatam. That unless we are perfect, we cannot go back to Godhead. And he said, but then that was Srimad Bhagavatam. Mahaprabhu appeared after Bhagavatam came. That is the grace of Lord Chaitanya. Why do you think Lord Chaitanya is there in the first place? If he cannot say it. If he can save Javai and Mahai, he can save words and he can save death. Right? And to end with the answer to your question. At one point in a temple, there were several devotees of Srila Prabhupada, and the Prabhupada said, you have to be 100% Krishna conscious to go back to God. You know this, right? Are you aware of this? Are you aware of this? 100%, you have to be 100% Krishna conscious to go back to God. I mean, everybody's face kind of mm-hmm. Right? And, you know, maybe 75%. Then he said, at least chant your rounds and follow the four elements principles. Even if you don't have your mind on Krishna, please do the externals. And then, the Prabhupada was leaving the room, one devotee came to him and he said, but Prabhupada, I'm not even that. And he said, just hold on to my dhoti, I have the back door keys. I have the key to the back door. That should give us hope. We just need to hold on to the dhoti. Have you been to that trip back? Yeah, you should go home. I'm under the jet lag. I have an 18-hour travel and I land up here. I'll see you tomorrow morning. Thank you for coming.